So who takes the last shot now for the New York Knicks in a close game?
I'm going to go Landry Fields.
No, you know who it's going to be.
Of course we know it's going to be Carmelo Anthony.
No, it's not.
Who would you say?
It's going to be Chauncey Billups because he always takes the last shot. Yeah, that's the worst part of this trade for me is having to sit there and watch Chauncey Billups take a three-pointer in a tie game from 5 feet behind the three-point line.
Yes, he's known to do that.
That's what he does. Welcome to the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. Adam Azer, Greg Urbano here as Melo goes to the Knicks. And we knew it was going to happen. And I was like, we got this show on Tuesday. Might as well happen on Monday, right?
Perfect time.
Perfect timing.
Yes.
We do not have a caller today. It's just us chatting about this. Yeah, I'm fired up. We're going to do our power rankings. We're going to look at who we think is going to make the playoffs in the East and the West. The Western Conference playoff race is ridiculous. I think Denver is going to be out of the equation now. Yeah. Let's break down this trade first, though. Then we'll look at some other trade rumors from around the league before we get into the rankings. The Knicks get Carmelo Anthony. They're going to sign him to a three-year, $65 million extension. Chauncey Billups, Sheldon Williams, Anthony Carter, Ronaldo Balkman makes his triumphant return to the Garden, and they're going to get Corey Brewer from Minnesota. And Newsday reports the Knicks might also get a first-round pick from Minnesota. The Nuggets get Felton, Gallinari, Chandler, Mozgov from the Knicks, and a 2014 first-round pick from the Knicks. They get two second-round picks from the Knicks that are actually the Warriors' picks via the Knicks, and they get $3 million cash. The Timberwolves get Eddie Curry, Anthony Randolph, and $3 million. I saw that according to Newsday. Yep. So, but that's actually everywhere now. So both teams getting $3 million from the Knicks. What do you think about this trade?
Well, you know, for the first part, you got to look at New York's main goal here, and that's to get two superstar players. That's now happened. We all know that replacing the guys around superstars is much easier than gaining a superstar.
Be careful with that word superstar, though.
I agree. I'm not the biggest Carmelo Anthony fan. I don't think he is one of the top three or five players in the NBA, which a lot of people are saying.
Is he top 10?
Probably.
He's right on the cusp.
And the one good thing about him, obviously, is offensively he's as good as anyone. But
is he? He shoots like 43%.
On the defensive side of the ball, that's my biggest worry. Defense
of course.
And rebounding. And that's such a huge part of the game.
Well, that's why I don't really love this trade for the Knicks, because if they gave up all this for Chris Paul or Darren Williams, great.
But this is Mike D'Antoni. He's your coach. He coaches offense. So you bring in offense.
And the reports say that D'Antoni and Donnie Walsh, the Knicks president, did not want to give up this much for him.
There was a lot. Especially knowing that chances were he was not going to agree to sign with the Nets. Therefore,
exactly.
He would have played out the season in Denver and simply gone and signed with the New York Knicks as a free agent. So, did they give up too much? Yes, I do think they did. But in the end, what was their goal? At least what I think was their goal was to get these two superstars together to try and see if they can build around them, which is easier than getting a superstar. It's easier to build around those guys.
I was very against this trade from the Knicks' perspective when I first saw it. I thought they gave up way too much, but that was last night on Monday night when it first went down. Now here on Tuesday, I've kind of warmed up to it a little bit. I think they have a good chance of getting Chris Paul or Darren Williams, and I think they have a good chance of doing that next year when they will be able to package Chauncey Billups' $14 million expiring contract in a move with either New Orleans or I think Utah. I think Darren Williams is more realistic, but that's way off in the future and a lot can change from here and now. But what we do know is that if superstar players want to end up in a destination, they certainly have a way of holding their team hostage and making it happen.
Yeah, and really in the end, Denver really did a good job of getting the max that they could out of this deal. You know, I mean, I think there's still some people in Denver who are going to be upset in how this season's going to end. As you talked about, they'll probably slip out of playoff contention now with that roster. But at the same time, they got a lot back for a guy who was going to leave. If you look at what happened last year with LeBron and Chris Bosh, clearly Carmelo was going to do the same thing and leave. May as well get as much as you can now. And obviously the New Jersey Nets, Denver can thank them for upping their ante and really making the Knicks have to increase their offer and add more pieces to the puzzle to bring Melo in.
The Nets are going to be painted as a failure here. And Prokhorov is already getting flack in the New York papers. I don't buy it. The fact is, I don't think they ever had a chance of getting Carmelo Anthony. So they did make the Knicks give up a lot more than the Knicks wanted to give up.
Well, they could have gotten him. They could have traded for him and just had him play the rest of the season, and then he would not have signed the deal with them. So it would make no sense then for them. The best method was to increase their offer, make it look like posture as if they're really going to go hard after Carmelo, make the Knicks give up more, and that's what happened. So in the end, they were successful in what they did. Are they losers in the whole getting a big-name guy so far? Yes. But again, that plan still is not just a 1 or 2 year plan.
That's not something they can control. No. They were a little bit too ambitious, thinking we've got this billionaire owner, we've got Jay-Z as a minority owner, and now we're going to be able to get superstars. No, it just doesn't work that way. Okay, the Milwaukee Bucks shouldn't be able to say, hey, we're going to get superstars. Some teams just aren't going to be able to attract the biggest names to their stage, and the Nets are one of those teams.
Well, we'll see when they move to Brooklyn, they maybe get a new stadium, maybe get a new team name, maybe get a new logo, something to create that buzz where, okay.
New logo. That's it.
You know what? Darren New jersey, Williams. A sharp-looking jersey. You know, maybe these guys will at least look at this team
a
as,
new
okay,
jersey.
They're no longer the
Very
New
clever.
Jersey Nets. They're the Brooklyn Nets and whatever, you know, if it is the same Brooklyn Nets name. But I do think that move will allow certain people to believe that, okay, this is going to be a team of the future that people really love.
So, again, the Nuggets get Felton, Gallinari, Mozgov, and Chandler. Chandler's a free agent after this year. They also get a 2014 first-round pick from the Knicks and 2 second-round picks. The Knicks only have 2 first-round picks in the next 4 years. They gave up a lot to get Tracy McGrady last year and his expiring contract, which put them in position to be able to get Amari Stoudemire and now Carmelo Anthony. Well, as we look at it from the Minnesota Timberwolves perspective, they get Eddie Curry, who's got an expiring contract, a big one. So they'll save some money, $3 million, and they'll be the last team, the next team now, to take a chance on Anthony Randolph. I think he should be able to get some minutes there, see what you can get from
him.
There's
no reason he shouldn't get minutes.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And, you know, again, for them to get cap space, it's like, well, where are you going to use that cap space? What guy can you attract to bring to Minnesota? That's going to be the tough test for their GM.
What do you think about the Knicks now? So this is their potential starting five. Probable starting five, let's call it. Billups at the point, Landry Fields at the two, Melo at the three, Amari at the four, Roni Turiaf at the five. Personally, I really think the Knicks, they've got 3 days left before the trade deadline. They've got to either try to make another move or sign maybe an Earl Barron. He's been mentioned. They have to get another center, because after Turiaf, you're talking about guys like Sheldon Williams and Sean Williams, guys that just are not centers.
Undersized.
Completely undersized. And Turiaf gets hurt every other game.
Right.
But if you look at that starting five, how much noise can they make in the East? I'll tell you what, if they play the Hawks in the first round, I'd take them over the Hawks. If they play the Magic in the first round, Magic haven't been playing that well, but I'd still take the Magic.
I actually don't know if I would take the Knicks over the Hawks.
I would.
I think the Hawks are actually still looking to make maybe a move to bring in maybe Raymond Sessions, someone else to bolster their guard depth. And basically, when you look at that matchup, great athletes on the court. Josh Smith against Carmelo Anthony would be just a tremendous matchup. And then you have Joe Johnson, who really in that matchup should be able to dominate who's guarding him. So I personally still like the Hawks in that matchup, and I personally still think that the Knicks are the sixth-best team in the Eastern Conference,
even with this deal. Fifth-best team.
I'm sorry, I disagree.
They have two all-stars. They have two stars.
I know.
But the Knicks guys are better than the Hawks guys.
Understandable, but Josh Smith also could have been an all-star this year. Probably should have been an all-star. So you've got Joe Johnson, Josh Smith, and you have, obviously, Al Horford, who's a great player.
The Knicks, the Knicks just beat the Hawks in their last meeting.
Okay.
The home teams have won so far this season. But then I think the Knicks would beat the Hawks, but they're not going to play the Hawks. It's pretty unrealistic unless it were maybe if it were a 4 or 5 matchup. But I think the Knicks probably stay in the 6th seed, because they are a good 5.5 games behind Atlanta, which is the number 5 seed right now. And Atlanta's only a game behind Orlando. So right now it looks like the Knicks are still probably going to end up playing Boston, Miami, or Chicago. Most likely going to be a first-round exit. I do think they'd have a chance against Chicago. I really do.
You really think they have a chance against Chicago?
They are 2-0 against Chicago this year.
I understand that. But obviously, Joe Kim Noah coming back this week. If they were fully healthy, if that Chicago team is fully healthy against the Knicks, I would go for a sweeper 5 games at most. That team is just too good.
6 games.
All right.
6 games.
You say so.
So I wanted to look at a quote from the Denver Post before we move on. Yeah. It comes from Mark Kiesla, who says, "Know what's sad about life in the NBA? The heart and soul of a basketball city was ripped out because Anthony bullied the Nuggets, forcing the team to take pennies on the dollar for its franchise player. After giving more than 7 years of his life, buzzer-beating thrills, and one gloriously deep run in the playoffs, maybe Melo doesn't owe us anything, but taking along Billups, who grew up in the city's Park Hill neighborhood in the deal, that's crummy, that's personal."
It's as if Carmelo said, "I'm not going unless Billups goes." Really, you know, part of the deal was Raymond Felton's going here. We need a point guard. The money made sense. So I'm not sure I see it in that manner. And especially I look at sports as a business, because that is what it is. Teams will cut a guy if he can't play, if he's injured, or if he's just not good enough. They will cut him and not pay him the money, you know, unless it's a guaranteed contract. So players can do what they want, I feel like. You know,
yeah, but I don't really like the way he went about this.
Well, I don't like guys who force trades when they're in the middle of a contract or things like that.
How open was he about this whole thing, though?
It was weird the way he was talking about it, Greg.
Kobe even had to say he's not answering any more questions.
I understand. It's not like he was in the middle of a contract or he just signed a contract. He was at the very end, and people asked him those questions. So, of course, he's going to be honest about where he wants to go. Why would he lie and say, you know, I don't mind playing here in Denver? He obviously wasn't going to re-sign with Denver the entire time. He never intimated that at all.
Yeah.
So for Denver or for the fans to feel slighted in any way, I'm sorry. It's a business.
No,
he made a wise business decision for himself for now and in the future.
I don't disagree with you. The only thing I would say is that he could have gone about it better. I didn't think he needed to be so public about it.
He didn't make it the Decision TV show or anything like that.
No, but
he didn't embarrass
the
team.
He put his team in a tough spot, okay? He was way too open about it and way too public about it. Do it behind closed doors. Go out and play basketball. He shouldn't be answering questions so honestly, basically saying, yeah, I want to go to New York. He's still on the Nuggets. He's being honest.
There's nothing wrong with that. In your contract,
you don't have to
say you're not allowed to talk about other teams.
You don't have to answer every question.
You don't have
to. Say no comment.
But there's nothing in your contract that says you can't talk about where you want to go.
Let's move on.
Yes,
what do you think about All-Star Weekend, Greg?
All-Star Weekend was good. I think the game was actually very good.
Yeah,
it was an exciting game. You know, obviously, a lot of highlights. LeBron James there at the end of the fourth quarter. Just an amazing dunk where he just ran from one end of the court to the other in full speed, probably faster than any athlete I've ever seen take off in a basketball court. And really just the athleticism of the NBA was showcased this weekend. And I feel like the talent, the depth of talent in the NBA, people need to take notice. And hopefully enough fans of other sports were able to see the All-Star Weekend and see that, wow, the NBA is very deeply talented.
Yeah, and the ratings were up, and I think the game actually played out, you know, more competitive than I thought. I thought there wasn't really that much alley-ooping and goofiness and just guys not caring. And just
not like the rookie sophomore game.
No, not at all. And yeah, by the way, congratulations to the rookies for winning. I had a feeling. Sure. Remember I said I had a feeling?
Yeah, I didn't think Blake Griffin would play. I mean, I figured it was such a long weekend that he would maybe dress and just maybe wave his hand.
They might have won without him, though.
Probably.
That was a pretty bad sophomore roster. But anyway, the All-Star game, the West does win, and Kobe goes off, and he wins the MVP, his fourth All-Star game MVP. He scores 37 points. He had 14 rebounds. Kevin Durant scored 34. LeBron had that triple-double. He and Amari both had 29 points. I really thought it was a great game, and I thought you saw how competitive those guys were.
Yep.
It wasn't just about having fun. In the fourth quarter, It was all business.
Yeah.
Chris Bosh took that stupid three-pointer, too.
He did. And watching Kevin Garnett cheer on LeBron and those guys, it was pretty interesting, obviously, you know, with what's been going on between those two teams and what happened with Wade shoving Garnett last week. And really, for the most part, it was just nice to see that these guys, you know, even though they have rivalries and they at times hate one another, they're competitors. They're athletes. And they'll play a game with whoever it is and pick it up right there and be able to cheer that person on.
I thought what was so interesting about that game, the four players on the Eastern Conference roster who played the least amount of minutes, three of them were Celtics.
Yeah.
I don't know why Doc Rivers decided to do it that way.
Smart.
Why? Saving their energy?
Absolutely. We know what happens to them after the All-Star break. They're an older team. They need the rest. I mean, and Paul Pierce really.
But I thought they'd be down there. I thought they'd be in there down the stretch.
Yeah.
And the only guy he put in there was Ray Allen for like maybe a possession. He hit that
right
three.
There. He should have been, I thought, 2 minutes earlier to hit another three or to at least get a shot. But you know, put him in there at that time. Obviously, it's just an amazing fall-away shot,
falling out of bounds,
not even hitting the rim. It's just beautiful.
He played 17 minutes. Pierce played 11. Garnett played 8. Al Horford played about 10.
But to me, the biggest loser of All-Star Weekend now is actually going to be DeJuan Blair, who no longer will be able to play in the rookie sophomore game, where he absolutely shines. I mean, if you watched him last year in the rookie game, I believe he had 20 and 20, forget the exact numbers. And then again, this year, self-alley-oop off the backboard.
Yeah,
he owns it. I don't see him playing in an All-Star game, so I don't know if he'll get back to the All-Star weekend and being able to enjoy the way he did this weekend and last year.
Did JaVale McGee get robbed?
I thought JaVale McGee's best dunks were in the first round.
That's exactly what I thought.
And then second round, they weren't that great. So, I feel like in the dunk contest, if you've done it a couple times, you start to realize, okay, first round, I just need to make the dunk on the first try and have it be pretty good, and I'll get a good score.
Yeah.
Get to that second round and then really show off. And I felt Blake Griffin did a better
job. The two-hoop dunk was awesome.
Absolutely gorgeous. I mean, if you watch on YouTube, on the NBA channel, they have super high-res, slow-mo instant replays of a few of the dunks from that weekend, or from this weekend, and that was one of them.
Yeah, very
beautiful
nice.
Dunk. Absolutely. And really, if you watch in the slow-mo, he doesn't even look in the left hand as he's dunking.
Yeah.
He's only looking at that right rim, so just feeling it out and being able to dunk that. Some spectacular dunks from all of the competition in the first round. Serge Ibaka, absolutely. I think, dunked the furthest dunk I've ever seen. I've never seen someone jump from that far on the
really?
Free throw line.
Was it that far?
Jordan's foot, I believe, was probably about halfway through the line.
Yeah,
Dr.
Maybe.
J clearly had almost
an
entire
foot. I'm so over the free throw line dunk. Who cares?
Still an amazing
How many
feat.
Players in the NBA can do that? Probably most.
I don't think, no. I
not,
don't
not most. Not
I,
most.
I think
but most of the
Serge,
best, most
JaVale,
of the good players in the NBA can.
I
bet there's at least 25 guys in the NBA that can do that.
I think you're overrating that.
You think
or underrating the difficulty.
How many guys in
that?
The All-Star game could have done it? I bet
I
almost every starter could have done it.
I do not think that at all. I don't think Dwayne Wade could.
I bet you Wade could.
No, he could not.
Maybe I'm wrong.
You're definitely wrong. We'll have to test it out.
Because Ibaka has very long arms.
Huge. And he jumps as high as those guys, as does JaVale McGee, who actually tried a free throw line dunk in a game this year. I don't know if you've seen the video of that.
I did,
I believe I sent it to you. But he tried winning a game.
Nice
and
work.
If you remember, late in the dunk contest, he said, Serge took one of my dunks because I believe in the second round he was going to go for the free throw line or maybe even beyond the free throw line.
I'm so over that. Congratulations to James Jones for representing the University of Miami very well and winning the three-point contest.
Congratulations to me for picking James Jones.
Yeah, nice work. So moving on to the news and the notes. The Bulls, they beat the Spurs on Thursday night. There actually was basketball last week. Not a lot of it. But they beat the Spurs on national TV, 109-99. And Joakim Noah is returning Wednesday at Toronto. He's been out since December 15th with a thumb injury. They went 22-8 without Noah, and now here they come. What did this win over the Spurs tell you about the Bulls as Derrick Rose scored 42, a career high?
I think it told me more about Derrick Rose than it did about the Chicago Bulls. It showed me that Derrick Rose is ready for the spotlight. He's ready this year. No more waiting to see what he's going to be. This guy is a legit superstar who can take over games offensively, passing the ball. Obviously, defensively, we know right now he's not at the point where he should be. But
I'm
he'll get even better and better because his athleticism is just through the roof. So
forget
when you
about
get a guy to simply just take defense, you know, in his heart and in his mind and really go out with the effort, he's going to be just as good as any point guard we may have ever seen in this league. And I look at Joakim Noah coming back. Obviously, he is one of their best defensive players, one of their best defensive rebounders. They're only going to get better, and they've been fantastic over the last few weeks.
Forget about the defense with Derrick Rose. He does so much.
And he won't be as...
And he's not that bad of a defender. No. I don't care what Nicholas Batum said. He's just not. Maybe against Andre Miller he is, because like you said, Miller's
he's
huge.
Not like many point guards. And really in the NBA today, you can't guard a great point guard one-on-one. You need help defense. It's
and he
just
struggled,
that simple.
He struggled with Tony Parker, but everybody's going to struggle guarding Tony Parker one-on-one. Okay. You're absolutely right about that. Derrick Rose was amazing. He was 18 of 28, and I thought the Spurs really needed to put a bigger guy on him, and that's something I'm looking for in the playoffs.
Like George Hill to rotate over to him.
Yeah, George Hill guarded him a little bit, and he did a better job than Tony Parker, but not enough. But I think, let's say the Lakers play the Bulls in the finals. Kobe's got to guard Derrick Rose. Let's say...
See, that'll wear him down, so yeah, it'll be interesting.
But that's,
what you have to
that's
do.
What
I mean,
has
many,
to happen.
Many teams will do that.
You cannot guard him with somebody small. You need somebody with length to bother him because he still doesn't have a great jump shot. He needs to get to the rim. You need a longer guy to guard Derrick Rose. I think, obviously, the Bulls keep answering the questions. If anybody has any doubts about them, I didn't think they could win the East. I do think they can win the East now.
Yeah, I think now also Tom Thibodeau, who you mentioned in our Coach of the Year discussion a few weeks ago, got to be probably at or near the top of that discussion now.
He's two.
And as they get better and better, obviously Popovich, you know, will probably end up winning the award as the Spurs just continue to roll. But great job in Chicago for a first-year coach.
Matt Barnes has missed the last 20 games for the Lakers. He's getting close to his return. And the Lakers lost to the Cavaliers. They really need something. And when they lost to the Cavaliers, I did watch some of that game, I just saw a bunch of garbage on the court. Yeah. They have some bad players. They're like the Heat. Only their big three isn't as good as the Heat's. Yep. I'm really worried about the Lakers. I don't know if Matt Barnes can be a savior, but they need something from him.
They need toughness, and that's a huge part of what Matt Barnes does on the court. And obviously, with Ron Artest struggling, a guy who can fit that role of a three that can stretch the court, hitting some threes, and also playing defense, Matt Barnes will be a very welcome addition to that Lakers roster, who right now, a little bit in flux, obviously, still not sure if they'll make a move with Ron Artest. Doesn't look likely, but really, for the most part, Matt Barnes coming back will at least solidify what Kobe, I think, started this weekend, getting a little bit of momentum there in L.A.
Nobody's gonna take Ron Artest.
The
guy has one of the worst contracts in basketball right now.
And unfortunately,
you'd have to throw in Bynum to get rid of
You really would. So,
Artest.
Unfortunately, and really, just the motivation's gone from him after winning a ring, which I didn't think that would happen.
Well, he sold everything, and he sold his motivation, too. Michael Redd is hopefully on his way back. He's in the final year of a six-year contract, paying him $91 million. He's making just more than $18 million this season, but he hasn't played since January 2010. And the Bucks right now, they're still in the picture. They're 3.5 games out of the playoffs with Charlotte in front of them at number 9. Milwaukee's number 10 in the East. I don't think this is really significant, to be quite honest. What's Michael Redd going
to
do?
No, you know, obviously they might push them into the playoffs to have a first-round sweep against Boston, Miami, or Chicago, whichever one of those three teams takes the one seed. But really, in Milwaukee, it's time to move on from the Michael Redd era, see what they could do building around Brandon Jennings and Andrew Bogut. But it's obviously welcome to have a great guy, great player, great person back to the NBA and see if he can still contribute.
Yeah, maybe 20 minutes a game, hit a few threes, something like that. But I just don't see it for the Bucks. It's been a bad year, and they have to get past Charlotte and Indiana in order to get that 8 seed. I don't see that happening. Some trade rumors, looking at what Ken Berger wrote earlier last week. The Hornets, they want to add a big man. Anton Jameson is on their roster. Jameson making $15.1 million next season. So this is interesting for a team that's owned by the league to be able to acquire a guy like Anton Jameson.
I think it's interesting when they say they want to add a big man and then they say Anton Jameson.
Well, they might want to add either a big man or Anton.
Yeah,
I don't know if this if that meant the same thing. Maybe I didn't phrase that properly.
No, I pretty much read the same thing, that they're looking to increase their size and then rebound.
This increases
and
their really, size.
A little bit, but he's not a rebounding power forward. We know what he is. He sits there at the three-point line waiting for a jump shot. Every now and
again,
he gets a little dribble penetration jumper, but for the most part.
He could rebound.
He could. He should.
I think this could really help them. This could make them a threat to get to maybe the Western Conference Finals.
I mean, it's possible, but I wouldn't put, Anton Jameson as the thing that's going to propel them to that next level.
I disagree. They're the sixth seed right now.
That you think
so they'd be
really
playing the Lakers
much.
In round one. I think Anton Jameson could really...
And that is a nightmare matchup for the Lakers, I think, personally, because you have to deal with Chris Paul, and then they have a pretty decent big front line. David West can body up against Pau Gasol, and obviously Okafor can do his thing there in the middle. So that's a dangerous matchup for the Lakers, without a doubt.
Everything's
just like
a
last
dangerous
year
matchup
with the Oklahoma
them.
City Thunder.
Everything's dangerous for the Lakers,
true,
the way they're playing
especially
right
in the Western Conference.
But if the Hornets got Anton Jameson... The one thing they just don't have is scoring. They're just such a bad scoring team, but they're very good on defense. I think that would be huge for them. I have a hard time seeing it happen because of the whole financial situation there.
Tough.
Ken Berger says the Bulls and the Celtics are, quote, widely expected to make a move before the deadline. Berger mentioned Anthony Parker and Kirk Heinrich, and also we've heard Shane Battier's name mentioned in connection with the Boston Celtics. Doesn't look like that Shane Battier move will happen, according to a lot of reports right now. But the Celtics being aggressive here.
There's no doubt. I think they see that adding one more piece of depth, obviously with Marquise Daniels going down, to be able to add someone else who can play that sort of a role of a tough guy who comes off the bench and just adds, energy to the floor. And obviously Shane Battier is one of those guys, hustles, and really for the most part is someone who can knock down the three without needing that many shots. He can come off the bench completely cold, knock down a couple threes, and they just send him right back to the bench, say thanks for doing that. And he'll also give you that toughness that everyone there in Boston plays with, especially on the defensive end.
His biggest value would be on defense, guarding Wade or LeBron, in theory. The Memphis Grizzlies are another team that's looking to make a deal. Of course, you might see O.J. Mayo on the move before the 24th. The Grizzlies, I think the Grizzlies are going to make the playoffs. They're the 8th seed right now, but they have the same record as Utah. Those two teams vying for the 8th spot. But I think Denver falls out of the equation. So I think the Grizzlies should make a move and really solidify themselves as a playoff team. But I think even if they don't make a move, as long as they tread water while Rudy Gay is getting healthy, I think they're in.
Well, they've mentioned... looking at with Houston, a trade with Houston, and looking at Courtney Lee, perhaps. Basically, the two of them are somewhat similar players. They play pretty much the same position. I do believe Houston regards O.J. Mayo in a little bit more than they certainly do in Memphis, so I wouldn't doubt that move is made within the next couple days.
And the Blazers have some expiring contracts that they could dangle. Joel Prisbilla has an expiring contract. Andre Miller has a non-guaranteed contract next season. That's basically an expiring contract. And Marcus Camby has 1 year left on his contract, $12.9 million salary. That could be on the move. So we'll see what the Blazers do. But the Blazers, somehow, they're the 5 seed right now, tied with New Orleans at that 5-6 spot, although they have a better winning percentage, one less loss than the Hornets. So Portland, unbelievable that they could be the 5 seed. The Western Conference, Greg, is crazy again.
Yeah, I mean, I thought when Brandon Roy went down and now the reports on what Brandon Roy is going to have in the future are just really sad for the most part.
Sad.
I definitely did not think they'd be as good as they are right now. all the credit probably goes to LaMarcus Aldridge, Andre Miller, and the guys who really, for the most part, are consistent. This is a team that is really consistent that you'll see every single night put forth the effort and play the same type of game that they always play. You're not going to see a lack of effort from that team, and that's why they are, you know, up, like you said, the 5 seed, which is a huge surprise. Yeah. Even if they were healthy, I might be surprised that they'd be a number 5.
They would give Oklahoma City a run. That would be the playoff matchup right now. As we look at the playoff seedings, and in the East, it's Boston, Miami, Chicago, Orlando 4, Atlanta 5, New York 6, Philadelphia 7, Indiana 8, with Charlotte 1 game back of the Pacers, and Milwaukee 2.5 games behind Charlotte, so 3.5 games out of the playoffs. And then the Pistons, I guess, are still in the discussion. They are 4.5 games out of the playoffs. Who do you like to make the playoffs in the East? Let's look at 6-7-8, which right now is Knicks, Sixers, and Pacers.
I've got the Knicks, the Sixers, and Charlotte. You know, you're looking at Charlotte. And really that team was, ever since Paul Silas came in there, turned it around for the most part. And I don't know if they just kind of gave up on Larry Brown or not, but, you know, the effort there has been.
They did. They said they stopped playing.
Yeah, their effort has been much better as of late. And, you know, they were talking about maybe trying to move Gerald Wallace, and good decision not to. Gerald Wallace, Steven Jackson, those are the two guys that will propel them into the playoffs. So I've got them as my A seed.
I'm still going to take the Pacers. Yeah. I think the Bobcats, I was looking at their schedule. Charlotte's schedule seems a little bit tougher than the Pacers. That's a total toss-up.
Yeah.
But I'll go with Indianapolis there. Indiana.
Yeah. Right.
Where do they play? They play in Indianapolis. So
sure,
I was just a half right. Out in the West,
thinking football.
San Antonio, Dallas 2, Lakers 3, Oklahoma City 4. Oklahoma City only a game and a half behind the Lakers. Then it's Portland, New Orleans, Denver, Memphis. Those four teams, 5, 6, 7, 8, separated by a game and a half, and Utah tied with Memphis for that 8 spot at 31-26. And then Phoenix is 27-27, still alive 2.5 games out of the playoffs. Again, the Nuggets, I'm going to take them out of the playoffs. I just don't think their lineup is good enough,
yeah,
and I don't think they have enough time to become cohesive. Yeah. So I think the Nuggets drop out. I'm going to replace them with Phoenix. I think Phoenix makes the playoffs. The Jazz and the Nuggets will not make the playoffs this year.
Wow.
Bit of a risky
Jazz
pick.
And the Nuggets. Well, I've got, you know, certainly Memphis jumping Denver.
Yeah, I got Memphis in too.
Utah right now looking at, what, 2.5 games above Phoenix. I'm not sure that Phoenix has what it takes to make a real run late in the season. I'm going to go with Utah as my 8 seed for now. Not
Utah's
sure, though, because really
ever
since Sloan left, it's not like anything's fixed itself. Darren Williams doesn't seem as though he has the answer, if that was what he was trying to say with Jerry Sloan. He had thought, basically, that the offense was not run the right way.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it run any differently or any better since then, so maybe they do turn around in the next couple weeks, but right now I've got them in the AC. Just because Phoenix right now, I'm not sure if they can put together a lengthy run of, you know, 6 or 7 straight wins.
Oh, it's going to be tough. Yeah. It's going to be very tough, but I'll take the Suns in a bit of an upset to sneak into the Western Conference playoffs, and it's time to look at power rankings, and we're going to let Greg Urbano go first, as usual, so hit it.
All right. So at number one, San Antonio Spurs. That's obvious. 46-10. I don't think anyone expected them to play this well this season. So as we mentioned earlier, Popovich probably win the coach of the year. And really, for the most part, what's going to go, you know, into the playoffs is going to be hopefully a healthy team, and hopefully what we see them from the regular season going into the playoffs. Number two, the Celtics. Boston right now. I thought Paul Pierce was hurt a little bit more than he was coming into this weekend, and he seemed fine over the weekend, so I've got them back.
He did not arrive in a wheelchair.
No, he did not, and I've got them back at number two in my power rankings. At number three, I still have the Dallas Mavericks. Last week, we talked about how they basically came into the break on just a great run. They're now 9-1 in their last 10, and really, for the most part, this month, I believe they're going to lose only one time if they win out, which I feel that they will. They're playing really great basketball right now. I don't see any reason to put them any lower than what I have them at number three. And at number four, the Chicago Bulls. For me, last week I had them at 3. I just moved them down because I moved the Celtics back up. I wasn't sure about the Celtics' health, so really I just moved them there. The Bulls, though, personally, I feel like obviously Derrick Rose has been great all season. Now he's going to have both Boozer and Noah, so I think Derrick Rose is going to get even better over the next few weeks. So going to be awesome to watch there in Chicago. And then finally, number five, the Miami Heat. You know, we know what they are, just watching them over the All-Star weekend. To see LeBron James, when he really wants to take over a game, and when he's really, really motivated, which he will be in the playoffs, it's going to be fun to watch. But for now, they are my number five seed. Still waiting for, you know, the full team to be healthy and see what they're really all about now that they've had enough time to play together.
So, Spurs, Celtics, Mavericks, Bulls, Heat.
You got it.
For you. For me, again, the same five as Greg, but in a different order. Spurs 1, Boston 2, Chicago 3, Miami 4, Dallas 5. What I find interesting about this is that if you look at opponent field goal percentage, a very important defensive metric, the top 4 teams are all in the East. Number 1 is Miami. Number 2 is Chicago. Number 3 is Boston. Spurs are 12th. Mavericks are 11th. So that the best defensive teams come out of the East right now. Actually,
because
Lakers
they get to play against the Eastern Conference competition.
I don't know.
That helps.
I don't think so. I think they are legitimately better defensive teams than the Spurs and the Mavs.
I could agree with that.
And that does concern me for the Spurs. It's always been my big concern, but I still think the Spurs are the best team in basketball. You know, I was thinking about putting the Knicks ahead of the Celtics, but I want to see it first. I want to see it first. I do feel confident that the Spurs are the best team in basketball and the Celtics are the best team in the East, and I think the NBA championship will be San Antonio over Boston.
Wow.
Going out on a limb.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is really going off on the cusp. Well, for me, I don't know. I mean, I think, yes, San Antonio seems to be that team in the Western Conference. I love the Chicago Bulls. I really do. I'm in love with the Chicago Bulls.
I think you're
not afraid to say it.
I
might be a little too high on them, but I would right now pick them to win the Eastern Conference. I know it might sound crazy, but really, I just see something special there in Chicago this year.
There's no way.
They will.
There's no way they're beating the Celtics in a 7-game series.
It'll be a fascinating, amazing series to watch. I cannot wait for the playoffs to start, especially in the East.
It would probably be a 7-game series that would come down to 3 overtimes, but the Celtics would find a way to win because that's what the Boston Celtics do.
If you think so. I mean, that Rajon Rondo, Derrick Rose matchup for if it goes 7 games would just be fantastic. But
yeah, it'd be pretty
good. We'll see. That's my pick right now to win the East.
Don't forget with Dallas, by the way, Woba is back. Yep. He's been playing about 20 minutes a game for 2 games. Peja Stojakovic is coming on. Mm-hmm. So I think these top 5 teams are all pretty close. I could see any one of them winning. I have the most doubts about would be Dallas.
Yeah.
But I could see the other 4 winning the championship. Dallas would surprise me a little.
Well, Dallas is a little bit tougher than I mean, you know, seeing what they've done over the last few years, they usually will get to the second round, have a tough matchup in that second round, and just be out-toughed by the team they're playing against. And the other team just out-strengthens them. And really, now with Tyson Chandler, I don't see anyone bullying them. And I think this year, if they do have a team that can win the NBA championship, this is the team. If they don't do it this year, might not ever happen for Dirk.
Next week, we will read your emails. Send us an email, cbsipodcastfeedback@cbs.com. cbsipodcastfeedback@cbs.com. And the NBA is going to look a whole lot different on Monday after the trade deadline than it does right now on Tuesday, February 22nd. So we'll be back next Monday, and we'll talk to you then. For Greg Urbano and our producer, Matt Brodsky, I'm Adam Azer. See you later, everyone.